I'd like to share with you an idea on Hanukkah that I think could be eye-opening. And I want to begin with a quote, and it's a pretty famous quote, but it's very timely. In 1897, Mark Twain wrote of the Jews, "If the statistics are right, the Jews constitute but 1% of the human race. It suggests a nebulous dim puff of stardust lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. Properly, the Jew ought hardly to be heard of, but he is heard of. He has always been heard of. He is as prominent on the planet as any other people. He has made a marvelous fight in this world in all the ages, and he has done it with his hands tied behind his back. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, and the Persian rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, and then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Romans followed and made a vast noise, and they're gone, and other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out, and they sit in twilight now or have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind. All things are mortal, but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality?" asks Mark Twain, arguably America's greatest writer in 1897. What is the secret of his immortality? What's the answer to this question? What is the grown-up adult answer to this age-old question? How is it that the Jews are still here? How is it that over the last 5,000 years, there have been close to 5 to 6,000 different types of religions and ethnicities and nationalities, and out of all of those 5,000 religions, only one has managed to survive close to 4,000 years continuously, longer than the Hindus, longer than the Buddhists, longer than the Han Chinese, and that is the Jewish people? What is their secret? And this despite suffering pogroms and murders and centuries and centuries and centuries of evil and torture and terror. There have been more Jews murdered in the last only 150 years than almost every other religion combined. What is the Jewish people's secret? Do they say a funny joke about an evil king who once declared new evil decrees on his on the Jews of his empire, and he gathered all the Jews into the town square, and he's reading off the new decrees, evil, horrible, torturous decrees that would befall the Jewish people, and there are women crying, and there are people fainting, and the men are covering the ears of the kids. But there's one guy in the back who just cannot stop laughing. He's laughing hysterically. And eventually, the king gets so bothered by it that he calls out this old guy in the back. He says, "Yo, guy in the back, why are you laughing?" And the guy in the back turns to the king and he says, "You think you're the first person to have started up with the Jews? You're wrong. There have been many before you. There was a guy. His name was Paro. You know what he did? He tried wiping out the Jews from the face of the earth. You know what happened to him? He's gone and we're still here. You know what we did to him? We turned him into matzah. There was a guy. His name was Haman. He wanted to destroy all of us. You know where he is? Gone. You know what we did to him? We turned him into Hamantaschen. There was a guy. His name is Antiochus. He tried wiping us off the planet. You know where he is? He's gone. You know what we did to him? We turned him into Latkes." So the old man turned to the king and said, "I sit here and watch you say these new decrees, and I cannot help myself but think, when you're gone and we're still here, what food will we one day make you into?" What is our secret? How are we so sure? I believe the answer is Hanukkah. I believe the answer to the secret of the immortality, of the longevity of the Jewish people is embedded in Hanukkah. You see, Hanukkah has a very fundamental question to it. We are taught that the Yomim Tovim, the holidays of the Jewish year, are essentially a ladder. It begins with Pesach. The Jewish people are born, the genesis of the Jewish people. On Shavuos, we get the Torah. It's like our bar or bas mitzvah. The Yomim Noraim is sort of the preparatory stage before our wedding, which is on Sukkot, which we celebrate with tremendous simcha. We're getting married, so to speak, to Hashem. And it culminates with Shemini Atzeres, which is referred to as the Yichud room, the tremendous intimacy, the closeness, the day of ultimate togetherness with Hashem. And it comes with unparalleled happiness. The obvious question is, the next Yom Tov in the ladder is Chanukah, but how could you possibly follow up Shemini Atzeres, which is the day of the Yichud room with Hashem, us and Hashem? Like, how could you possibly follow up a wedding day? It's the happiest day of your life, is it not? I believe the answer to this question is the answer to Chanukah. It's the secret to Chanukah. And in turn, it's the secret to the Jewish people's survival throughout thousands of years of essentially nothing but pain and torture. But let me begin with a story. Several years ago, I was in downtown Cincinnati with a group of friends of mine, and we're walking down the street, and we see at the street corner, there's like this priest who's standing on a chair, and he's preaching. He's got a couple people around him, and he looks and he sees a group of Jews walking towards him, and he licks his lips, and he turns to us and he says, "Jews, get over here." So we walk over, and he right away he says, "Jews, you know you're wrong. Why do you guys even try?" So I turn to him and I say, "We're not wrong." And he says, "Okay, I see how this is going to be. Tell me." And there's like a group of people that's starting to gather around this spiritual boxing match, you know, Ali Frazier. He says, "What does the word Elokai mean?" So I said, "It means God." He said, "Okay, what does the word Elokim mean?" I said, "Also God?" He says, "No, Elokim is plural. It's multiple gods. You see, there's God, and then there's his son, Yashka." And the crowd goes, "Ooh, ah." Down goes Frazier. So I look at him and I say, "Are you claiming to know Hebrew? Do you have any idea what you're talking about? What does the word totafos mean? What does the word v'yahavta es Hashem aleikecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol me'odecha mean? What does the word b'reishis bara Elokim es Hashemayim v'es haaretz mean? What does the word v'yedaber Hashem al Moshe lemor? What are you even talking about?" And the crowd goes, "Ooh, ah." So this priest sort of orients himself, and he throws a Hail Mary, a last-ditch effort. And he says, "Okay, if you Jews think you're the chosen people, why is it that so many bad things happen to you?" And the crowd goes, "Ooh, ah." So I turn to them all and I say, "Gather around, folks, gather around. I got breaking news for you all. We are not the chosen people." And the crowd goes, "Oh." And there's that guy in the back, he goes, "Larry, get back here. He just said the Jews are not the chosen people. Larry, come over here." I turn to them and I say, 4,000 years ago, in a world run amok of murder and theft and idolatry and adultery and darkness, there was one guy who chose light. There was one guy who chose godliness. There was one guy who held the torch of hope and honesty and integrity and morality for all to see, and he chose God, and therefore God chose him. And true, there have been many times throughout history where the Jewish people have failed to choose God. Well, we've been here long before Christians, and we'll be here long after Christians, because in a world where people choose lust and power and prestige and honor, we forever choose God, and therefore he forever chooses us. And I walked away. You see, when Hashem came to Avraham's tent and knocked on his door and said, "Hello, my name is God, nice to meet you," he said to Avram, "I see that you're holding up the torch of morality. I see that you're holding up my banner in this world. I want to make a deal with you. You promise me that you and your children will forever hold my torch high in this world, forever be the flag bearers of Hashem, of godliness in this world, and I in turn will make you indestructible. Anoichi magen lach. I will bless you. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. I will make you indestructible." And this deal, this bris, this covenant that took place with Avraham has been our secret throughout history. It's been our formula for success. We choose Hashem, he chooses us. We don't choose Hashem, we get left to the wolves of the world. This has been a theme throughout our history. When we choose Hashem, He miraculously chooses us. When we don't, we fly off the map. We're sitting in Mitzrayim. It's been 210 years of nothing but torture and pain. Our children have literally been sliced and their blood was drained and they were thrown into the Nile River. What does the pasuk say? In Shemos Beis Chaf Gimel, Vayeanchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avayda. The Yisraelim were groaning under the bondage, and they cried out, V'ta'au shavasam elohim. They finally davened to Hashem. V'yishma elohim es na'akasam. Hashem listened to them. V'yizkor elohim es briso es Avram es Yitzchak v'es Yaakov. Suddenly he remembered the covenant he made with Avram Avinu. Suddenly you remembered. It's been 210 years. Where were you, Hashem? You know what Hashem says? Where were you? Why didn't you step up to the plate and daven? Why didn't you choose me? Why didn't you choose light? When we chose Hashem, He chose us. Because that's our secret. We choose Hashem, we fill the world with light, He chooses us. No matter how big the enemy, no matter how sophisticated, no matter how much of the world they've conquered, we walk out of Egypt. I should say, we limp out of Egypt. We're in the middle of a midbar. And what happens to us? We get attacked by the Amalekim. A brutal, vicious, huge nation comes and attacks us, inexperienced fighters, hobbling Jews who have just broken out of 210 years of slavery. What does the Torah say? V'haya kasher yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael. Whenever Moshe lifted up his hand, signifying to the Jewish people to look up to Hashem and choose Hashem, we were victorious. V'kasher yaniach yado. But when his hands got tired and he had to put them down, and we didn't look up, and we thought we could beat the Amalekim ourselves, we lost the war. Because when we choose Hashem, He chooses us. When we don't, we are left to the wolves of the world. Because that's our secret, that's our formula, that's the mantra in which we walk down the road of life. The Beis HaMikdash gets destroyed. We get thrown and expelled all over the world. Murders, pogroms, torture. The Jewish people should have been finished. Jewish history should have been over with, but it wasn't. You want to know why? Because we didn't stop choosing Hashem. The pasuk that perhaps encapsulates that moment more than any other pasuk is Al Naras Bavel. Sham Yasham Nugam Bachinu B'Zachrenu Asiyun. There we were, sitting in the rivers of Babylon, and we were weeping over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But then the pasuk says something strange. Al aravim b'soicha tolinu kinnereisinu. We took our harps and we hung them up on the tree that was nearby. These people narrowly escaped the destruction of Yerushalayim. They literally swam through rivers of blood in order to get out. Why did they have their harps on them? Why did they have their flutes on them? A couple months ago, I had a fire in my apartment. It was Friday night, and I woke up, and I hear an alarm, and I go to my dining room, and I see a fire. And it's not the Havdalah candle hits a little napkin kind of fire. It's like the entire room is on fire, and I have a whopping 3 seconds to get out. And I grab my kid, and I run out. I'm not searching for my tuba. I'm not schlepping my drum set all over the place. Why do these people have their harps on them? The answer is, that's our secret. The answer is the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because tachas asher le'avadato as Hashem alekecha b'simcha. We were unenthusiastically serving Hashem. We weren't really interested. We were citizens of the world first and Jews later. We were Greeks first and Jews second. We were Polish men first and Jews second. We were Germans first and Jews second. We were Americans first and Jews second. We didn't really care. You better believe the way we're going to pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off is with our hearts, with our music, with our energy, with our enthusiasticness, with zest. Because that's the only way. We serve Hashem. We choose Him with glee. We choose Him with music. We choose Him with energy. And then He chooses us. And then came the Greeks. And the Greeks posed the greatest and most intense threat to our national survival than any other enemy we experienced up until that point. Because almost every other enemy that wanted to wipe out the Jewish people, after they failed to do so entirely, there was no threat that the Jewish people were going to go join their society because their society was horrible and barbaric. When we limped away from the Amalekim, no one was enticed by the Amaleki culture. When the Babylonians and the Egyptians and the Plishtim started up with us, we weren't exactly in throngs going to join their society. But the Greeks offered something different. At first, they didn't offer violence. They offered theology, philosophy, sophisticated intellectual pursuits, arts, science, things that spoke to Jews, intense rational thinking, logic, reasoning, you know, the things that Jews eat for breakfast. And we began dropping like flies. First it was 1%, 5%, 10%, 15%, 30%, 40%, 60%, 80% of us gone, subsumed. But there was a small number that didn't give up. And although the Greeks dominated and almost conquered the entire world, and virtually nobody put up a serious fight, because why would you? The Greek society, the Greek culture was fantastic. It was high tech. It was sophisticated. It was great. It ushered in science and philosophy and libraries and art and gymnasiums. Why wouldn't you get subsumed by them? Adopt their culture. It's fantastic. It's the best the world has ever seen. In fact, it's the very foundation of our Western world. Why wouldn't you get subsumed? And the Greeks looked at that 10% of the Jewish people and scratched their head. What is wrong with them? Why aren't they getting subsumed like the rest of the world? Why are they putting up a fight? And it bothered them. And they began to focus their attention on us. And they began declaring laws that forced us to drop our Jewish ways. Laws such as any Jewish girl that gets married has to have intimacy the night of her marriage with a Greek officer. Or how about the rule that you weren't allowed to have a front door of your house, guaranteeing that the custom and the societal, the street smarts, the classiness, the art, the science of the street would flood the Jewish homes. You cannot have a front door. Jewish history should have been finished. The Jewish people should have been over with, but it wasn't. You want to know why? Because there was a group of people that got up on a chair and said, Mi Lashem Eli, my Rebbe Rabbeisai, Jewish brothers and sisters, the only way for Jewish survival is to choose Hashem. If we choose Hashem, we strengthen the covenant he made with Avraham Avinu, and he'll choose us. If we don't, we're lost forever. That's our secret. Sukkot is a wedding with Hashem. If you ever go to a wedding, you see that the chasan and kala, the bride and groom, are very happy. But there's a degree of edginess and anxiety underneath that happiness, because who's to say that the marriage is going to last? In America, there's like a 54% chance that it won't last. You barely even know the person you're marrying. But if you go to a 50th wedding anniversary, and you look in the eyes of the bride and the groom, the husband and wife, you see nothing but complete, unadulterated love and happiness. Why? Because this is a couple that's been through it all together. This is a couple that went through years and years and years and decades of togetherness, of choosing each other. They were there together when they walked into their new apartment, and it was smelly and there were rats, but they were filled with happiness. And then came the news that she couldn't have a baby, and it was painful. It was painful, and they went to doctors, and he slept, and he was there with her, and he cried on her shoulder, and she cried on his shoulder, and they were there together. And then finally the news that they were pregnant together, and it was unbelievable happiness, and they were there dancing together for the whole night long. They couldn't stop dancing. And then he got fired from his job, and the months and months of looking for a job, and their bank account getting less and less and less, and the happiness of the day that he finally got a job, and he comes home from work on the first day, and there she is standing on the lawn with a sign and balloons, and she's waving. And then the news that he has cancer, and she brings him every day for treatments, and she's sitting by his bedside, unflinching, unwavering dedication. They're there together the day they marry off their first child together. They're there in life together. An anniversary is the celebration of a million moments that two people chose each other. That is Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the celebration of the million times that the Jewish people chose Hashem, and therefore He, in turn, chose us. It's the Yom Tov, it's the holiday of celebrating the Jewish people's ability to choose Hashem when it's not fun, when it's scary, when there's a million other options, when it's violent, when it's painful, when I have a headache, when I spilled coffee on my shirt. And nevertheless, I chose Hashem. There are 354 days of the Jewish year. Out of those 354 days, 172 of them are days of significance. A Shabbos, a Yom Tov, a Chol HaMoed, a Sfiras HaOmer, a fast day. Something going on. Of those 172 days where something's going on, 127 of those days are between Pesach and Sukkot, in the spring and the summer. In the fall and winter, virtually nothing going on. Yet there is Hanukkah. Why? So you're going to say, well, that's when it fell out. Yeah, but why did Hashem arrange that the Hanukkah story fell out in the dead of the winter? The answer is because that's precisely the point. Hashem wants us to dance when it's not Simchas Torah, and cry when it's not Tisha B'Av, and pour out our heart when it's not Yom Kippur. Precisely the darkest day of the Jewish year is the day where Hanukkah must be. It's the day where Hashem wants us to rise up and show us our courage, our loyalty, our pride to be a Jew. The Jewish year gets less, the sun goes down and becomes less and less throughout the winter. You know the exact time where it starts getting higher again? Oh, Hanukkah! Because that's precisely the point. The Jewish people are the only people on earth that start their day at sunset. When does Shabbos start? Friday night. When does Pesach start? The night. When does Shavuot start? At night. When does Hanukkah start? At night. We're the only people on earth that begins their day at night, because that's precisely the point. Our ability to bring light in the darkness, our ability to see godliness in the darkness, our day starts when the night falls. Life didn't get much better after Hanukkah. In 135 CE, Romans massacred 580,000 Jews. And then came the Crusades in 1095. And then came Spain in 1492 with almost unparalleled dedication to uproot Judaism. The Spanish Inquisition should have wiped the Jewish people off the map. Jewish history should have been over with, but it wasn't. You want to know why? Because we didn't stop choosing Hashem. August 2nd, 1492. The Abarbanel, the leader of Spanish Jewry at the time, is sitting in the office, the throne room, of Ferdinand and Isabella, who just declared that every last Jewish person in the entire Spanish kingdom, which was essentially running the world at the time, will be murdered or be exiled. And the Abarbanel is pleading with them. And the Abarbanel, who basically ran the finances of the entire kingdom, was very well liked by Ferdinand and Isabella, so much so that they offered to let him stay. They said, "You, my friend, could stay. We'll even keep a minion of people here so that you can stay, but everyone else has got to be put to death or kicked out." And the Abarbanel turns to them and he says, "If my people go, I go." And the Abarbanel, who left billions upon billions of dollars in Spain, walked outside to the streets of Spain, and he sees the Jewish people depressed, anxious, fearful, shaking. They're dragging the three possessions they're taking along, and the Abarbanel runs to a local tavern. He barges through the door, he runs to the back of the tavern, and he takes the last 5 coins that he has in his possession, and he goes over to the band that was playing in the back of the tavern, and he gives each one of the band members a coin, and he says, come with me, and they go with him to the edge of the city, the gates of the city, and he says, sit right here and start playing music. And on August 2nd, 1492, which was Tisha B'Av, this band starts playing music, and the Abarbanel gets up on a chair and he says, holy brothers and sisters, I am well aware that it's Tisha B'Av today. I am well aware that it's usher to listen to music on Tisha B'Av. But listen up. The Jewish people survive because of one reason and one reason only. It's because we choose Hashem. We are about to be kicked out of Spain. We are about to be spread across who knows where, the world, Europe. Remember, enthusiastically choose Hashem because that's the only way. And in one of the most surreal moments in Jewish history, the Abarbanel on Tisha B'Av got a group of people to dance his way out of Spain because that is our only way. Our only way forward is the enthusiastic choosing of Hashem, and therefore He chooses us. And then can Chelmniki in 1648, and Bohemia in 1744, and in Austria in 1843, and in 1915 the Russian army killed 100,000 Jews, and in 1917 Ukrainian peasants killed 200,000 Jews, and in 1918 and 1919 120,000 Jews were killed in over 500 pogroms. 500 pogroms. And then came the Holocaust. 6 million Jews. 6 million Jews. We use that number like a statistic. 6 million lives were snuffed out. Jewish history should have been over with. The Jewish people should have been finished, but it wasn't. You want to know why? Because we didn't stop choosing Hashem. On that fateful day, when Auschwitz was finally liberated, and the Russian army came and announced freedom to all the prisoners in Auschwitz. Shocked. They couldn't believe what they were hearing. And the Russian army began clearing out the camp. And skeletons of men were being carried to trucks and buses to take them to freedom. But there was one man who just sat there. One prisoner was frozen. He didn't move. He was transfixed. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours go by. And eventually, he's the last prisoner left in Auschwitz. And a soldier calls out to him and he says, listen, we're leaving. It's now or never. So this man gets up from his barrack and he limps his way to the gates of Auschwitz. And right as he gets to the gates, he stops. And he looks up to heaven and he says, Father in heaven, never in my life did I have as close of a relationship to you as I did here. Every second of my day, I cried for you, I dreamed for you, I hoped for you, I davened for you, I sang to you, I pleaded for you. Every morsel of bread I ate, I thought of you. Every drop of water I drank, I listened to you, I prayed to you, I cried to you. Promise me, Hashem. Promise me. Look down from your heavenly throne. We were crushed. We were tortured. We were burnt. We were murdered. Yet we didn't stop choosing you. We called out your name. We sang your song. Now it's your turn to choose us. And he stepped through the gates to freedom. Because that's our secret. We choose Hashem, He chooses us. On May 15th, 1948, exactly one day after the State of Israel was declared, we get attacked from all our neighbors, Egypt, Jordan, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, all with one purpose: to wipe out the state of Israel and to murder every single Jew alive. Jewish history should have been over. The Jewish people, at least in the state of Israel, should have been finished, but it wasn't. You want to know why? Because we didn't stop choosing Hashem. On May 29th of that year, just a couple days later, Harold Livingston, who was a 20... year old, was approached by his friend Leon Frankel, who told him, "Listen, the Egyptian army is 20 miles out of Tel Aviv. If you don't get up in your plane right now and drop a bomb on them, it's over." So Harold Livingston gets up in his plane, which was an old German plane that they found, and he says Shema Yisrael, and he drops a bomb on the Egyptian army, and in nothing short of a miracle, the Jewish people are saved. The war is won. And in a later interview, Harold was asked what was going through his head when he was flying that plane. And he said that he looked up to the sky and he said, "Master of the universe, I'm not alone flying this plane. This plane is flying on the wings of 6 million souls. 6 million neshamos, 6 million lives, 6 million people who all chose you, Hashem. Now it's time for you to choose us. Because that's our secret. Because Avram Avinu was told by Hashem, you choose me, I will make you indestructible. Anoichi Magen Lach, it's a guarantee. You can bet your bottom dollar. You choose me, I choose you. That's our secret. That's what we celebrate on Hanukkah, the ability to choose Hashem and His miraculous salvation that He will give. Our response to war isn't political prowess. It's not military might. It's choosing Hashem. A war breaks out in Gaza. Our knee-jerk reaction should and must be, how can I strengthen my choosing of Hashem? We say something very odd in Al Hanisim. We thank Hashem for the Al Hanisim, Al Gvuros, Al Tshuos, V'Al Hamochamos. We thank Hashem for the miracles and the salvation and the strength that He displayed for us. And we also thank Hashem for the war itself. Now, why would we thank Hashem for the war itself? Would we not have been better off without a war? The answer is, says the Chasam Sofer on page 193 in his Drushes, is precisely the war is what propels us and kicks us in the pants to choose Hashem, which in turn propels Him to choose us. Sometimes when we are lackadaisical in our choosing of Hashem, He brings about a war, which is a nuclear option. It's a last-ditch effort by Hashem to inspire us to choose Him, which is going to guarantee that He chooses us, because that's the formula. He propels us to choose Him so He can choose us, because there's no other way. That's the formula. That was the promise. That was the covenant. That was the bris. Alam Mochamos is thanking Hashem for the war because it inspired us to choose you, which guaranteed that you chose us. The question is, how? How do we muster up the strength, the inner courage, the fortitude to choose Hashem when it's so easy not to? So here's an idea. If we were to recognize the spiritual power that we have inside of us and the spiritual dynamite that comes out of us when we choose Hashem, it becomes all the more easy to do so. When we recognize that I have a spiritual rocket ship inside of me, and if I choose Hashem in a moment where I don't want to, a hostage could get out of Gaza, or a tidal wave is prevented, or a miscarriage is prevented, suddenly, you better believe I'm choosing Hashem. Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, who was the chief rabbi of a place in Spain called Tarragona in the 1400s, was once approached by his Talmidim, his community, and it was in the height of the Spanish Inquisition, and they came to him and they said, listen, we are out. This is too hard for us. We're not asking you, we're telling you, we're leaving, we're becoming Christians. But we have one question for you. When we become Christians, does that mean we are no longer Jews? Are we still gonna get punished for eating pork and not shaking the lulav and eating chametz on Pesach? Or if we leave, we leave. Essentially what they were asking was, is Judaism an intellectually based religion in which if you subscribe intellectually, then you're part of that religion, but if you don't subscribe intellectually, you're not part of that religion, as is the case with almost every other religion, in which if you intellectually subscribe, then you're part of it, and if you don't and you go through some sprinkling of water, then you get out of it? Or is there something more to Judaism? And he looked at them and he said, sorry folks, you can run, but you cannot hide. You are always a Jew. So they turned to him and they said, why is that fair? Because our great-grandparents chose Judaism on top of a mountain somewhere, so therefore we have to deal with this? He turned to them and he said, you're making a mistake. You guys, your souls, were also on top of that mountain, on Mount Sinai. And you also chose Judaism. So they looked at him and he said, okay, but how is that fair? What is my soul, which is sitting next to Moshe and Yehoshua and Kalev, great people, the greatest people of all time? How does my soul have the right to accept Judaism for me? What does my soul know about Spain in 1444? What does my soul know about Austria in 1666? Or Berlin in 1933? Or America in 2023? What does my soul know about any of that? How does it have the right to choose? How does it have the right to agree to a deal, to abide by a certain set of laws that will affect me 4,000 years later? So Rabbi Yitzchak Arama turned to them and said, you're making a mistake. When your soul was at Har Sinai and it said Nasa v'nishma, it agreed to the Torah, it knew exactly everything that would happen in your life. It knew all your struggles. It knew all your anxieties. It knew that you would come from a divorced home. It knew that you wouldn't have the upbringing that you thought would be ideal. It knew the school you would go to. It knew about the abusive sister. It knew about everything. It knew about Spain in 1444 and in Austria in 1666 and in Berlin in 1937 and in America in 2023. And it knew about the smartphones. It knew about the billboards. And it knew about your struggles and your issues and your self-doubts. It knew about everything. And Afalpike, nevertheless, it said, Nasa v'nishma. And right at that moment when it said that, you were injected with a soul that was tailor-made to your life. It was a curated soul, perfect for you, for your existence, for your childhood, for your parents, for your environment, for your setting and backdrop and scenario. It was a soul given the exact amount of holiness necessary to choose Hashem, the exact amount of Kedusha necessary to be a spiritual rocket ship that could unleash spirituality in any moment of its life, which could save the entire Jewish people. Every single person in this world, by definition, contains a soul that has immense, unfathomable holiness inside of it, which the entire Jewish people needs. Hugely consequential souls rests in the bodies of every single Jew on earth. And when we recognize that and we realize that, how could I not choose Hashem? Everywhere, always, in every scenario, because that's the secret of Hanukkah. The darkest moments of the year is when I'm going to choose Hashem. I want to end with a quote from Adolf Hitler. This is found in Hitler's Apocalypse, which is a book about Hitler. Quote, if only one country for whatever reason tolerates a Jewish family in it, that family will become the germ center for fresh sedition. If one little Jewish boy survives, even without any education, even without any synagogue, and no Hebrew school, Judaism will still be there, for it is in his soul. The Jewish spirit has been around from the moment these people were formed, and there is no Jew, not a single one, who does not personify it. Adolf Hitler. When we choose Hashem, aside from filling our homes with light, we in turn make our little teeny tiny nation indestructible. We choose Hashem, he chooses us. We light a candle in the darkness. We choose Hashem when we don't want to. We make our people indestructible. And that is the secret to Hanukkah.